Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature, Text Number 22. Gyanena drishta tatvena.
Gyanena drishta tatvena.
Vairagena baliyasa.
Vairagena baliyasa.
Tavayuktena yogena.
Tavayuktena yogena.
Dhirvenatma samadhina.
Dhirvenatma samadhina.
Gyanena drishta tatvena.
Gyanena drishta tatvena. This devotional service has to be performed strongly in perfect knowledge and with transcendental vision. One must be strongly renounced, and must engage in austerity and perform mystic yoga in order to be firmly fixed in self-absorption. Please repeat, this devotional service. This devotional service
has to be performed strongly.
Has to be performed strongly.
In perfect knowledge.
In perfect knowledge.
And with transcendental vision.
And with transcendental vision.
One must be strongly renounced.
One must be strongly renounced.
And engage in austerity.
And must engage in austerity.
And perform mystic yoga.
And perform mystic yoga.
In order to be firmly fixed in self-absorption.
In order to be firmly fixed in self-absorption.
Purport. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be performed blindly due to material emotion or mental concoction. It is specifically mentioned here that one has to perform devotional service in full knowledge by visualizing the Absolute Truth. We can understand about the Absolute Truth by evolving transcendental knowledge. And the result of such transcendental knowledge will be manifested by renunciation. That renunciation is not temporary or artificial, but it is very strong. It is said that development of Krishna consciousness is exhibited by proportionate material detachment or vairagya. If one does not separate himself from material enjoyment, it is to be understood that he is not advancing in Krishna consciousness. Renunciation in Krishna consciousness is so strong that it cannot be deviated by any attractive illusion. One has to perform devotional service in full tapasya austerity. One should fast on the two Ekadasi days, which fall on the 11th day of the waxing and waning moon, and on the birthdays of Lord Krishna, Lord Ram, Lord Rama, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are many such fasting days. Yogena means by controlling the senses and mind. Yoga Indriya Samyamya Samyamma. Yogena implies that one is seriously absorbed in the self and is able, by development of knowledge, to understand his constitutional position
in relationship with the super self. In this way, one becomes fixed in devotional service, and his faith cannot be shaken by any material allurement. So the text again. Yogena drishta tatvena vairagena valiyasa tapo yuktena yogena tirenatma samadhina. This devotional service has to be performed strongly in perfect knowledge and with transcendental vision. One must be strongly renounced and must engage in austerity, perform instant yoga in order to be firmly fixed in self-absorption. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Srimade Bhakti Vedanta Swami Vinamane Namaste Sarasate Deve Oramam Prasharane Nirvishesha Srinivada Vasudakyaya. It's nice to be here again. Seems like only yesterday. Less than yesterday, Lord Brahma, since Lord Brahma's 1 second is equal to 96,000 of our years. So. I was only here less than a second of Lord Brahma's lifetime. But here, it mentions that there are two aspects of becoming Krishna conscious. One is becoming detached from material existence, coming to the platform of liberation from our material identification. And the other is acting on the spiritual level or the spiritual platform of our actual identification as being Krishna's eternal servant. So though the emphasis is on, more or less you could say, performing devotional service, the devotional service has to be performed not only with not or without a false ego, that has to be performed with the actual ego, ego of identifying ourselves with Krishna. Krishnara Srupa, boy. Jivara Srupa, boy. Krishnara Nityadas. That's the beginning of devotional service. Not only a Hambramasmi, but I am Krishna Das. Opi Bharata Padakamalayor. Dasa, Dasa, Anu Dasa. I am the servant of the greatest devotee, the servant of the servant of the servant of the great devotees, specifically the gopis. So that takes knowledge. Because the opposite of knowledge is ignorance. And ignorance means that I'm identifying myself with this gross and subtle material bodies. And since I am identifying myself with these gross and subtle bodies, therefore I'm in ignorance. So the cure for ignorance is to attain knowledge. So that we can actually see who we actually are. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ukramantam siddhim vapi bhujana bhagananvita vimuro nanapashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body, or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So human form of life is meant for training. But what kind of training? Probably we used to mention. There's so much technological training. Someone wants to become a scientist, someone wants usually a computer engineer or get a degree in business. So many different types of training are going on. But who is actually getting training to see with the eyes of transcendental knowledge? Not only the fact that I'm not this body, or even the details of what kind of consciousness produces what kind of body in the next lifetime, how we're actually even quitting the body. How many people have any idea how they're quitting the body? They don't even know how the soul comes into the body. We may laugh when the child asks the mother, "Dear mother, where did I come from?" And at least previously, the mother used to say, the stork brought me. I don't know if they still say that anymore. But they don't actually know where the soul comes from. Probably the stork is a better answer than the one that they really have. They think that material life is born as simply a combination of material elements. They don't know how the soul enters into the body and how the soul quit the body. They don't know that because of the presence of the soul, the body appears to be alive, although the soul of the body is always not alive. How can something that was dead or suddenly become alive, and something that's alive suddenly become dead? If something's alive, then it's going to be alive forever, according to Krishna. Ritasihi dhruvam rintura, dhruvam janam ritasihita, tasmata parihariyate, vetvam soshitim arhasi. One who has taken his birth, death is certain, and one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, the unavoidable discharge of your duty should not remain. Avyaktadini bhutani, vyaktama dhyani bharata, Avyakta nidanam yeva tatra ka paridevya. The body was unmanifest in the beginning, becomes manifest, and then it becomes unmanifested again. Therefore, you should lament. In other words, the body is always dead. Sorry for the bad news. We're walking around in a dead body. But due to the fact that we're in the body appears to be alive. Just like a car, only an insane person will believe that their car is alive. It only appears to be alive when you turn on the engine and it starts moving. But actually the car, when you turn on the engine and it's moving, it doesn't mean it's become alive. It's still dead. And when you turn off the engine, no one starts to cry, oh, my car is dead. My car is dead. It's not moving. Call the ambulance. Let them come and resuscitate my car. Let it move again. Now the car, when it's turned off, now we understand it was always dead because the soul is not working the car anymore. But it's the soul or the passenger or the driver who makes the car appear alive. Now, in material existence, whether we're aware of it or not, everyone is working hard to keep the body so-called alive. In other words, to keep ourselves in the body. That takes up a lot of our existence. Why are people working so hard? Why do they have a job? Why do they eat? Because if we don't eat, then we think that the body is going to die. Because the body is not going to die because it's already dead. But we're going to have to leave the body, that's all. But we're not going to die when we leave the body because we're leaving so many bodies behind. So many bodies coming and going, and we're not dying. So when we leave this body, we're not going to die, but we'll have to get another body. Now, this whole concept is that I'm going to die if I don't take care of my body. One cannot have vairagya, or detachment from the body, if one is completely absorbed, abhinivesita, in this concept that if the body dies, I'm going to die. That's the end of the story. It's all over, folks. He died. Let's all cry. 1, 2, 3. And even if they went on to some other place, it makes no difference because they have no relation with me anymore, and the only value anyone has is because they have a relation with me. Now that they've lost the connection with me, therefore they're as good as dead, nowhere, no matter where they went. So material existence means centering around false ego and the drama that goes along with our present false ego. And the false ego creates its drama. On one side, the drama is, I am, as I've said many times, I am Tarzan, she is Jane, I am Mickey Mouse, she is Minnie Mouse, I'm Romeo, she is Juliet. So this whole drama that's going on, and then Romeo and Juliet set up house, the kingdom of God. And they have their expansions, they start expanding. They have their Garudas sitting in their garage. And the whole drama goes on to expand the kingdom and to protect it from the demons. Demon means anyone who's not trying to give me something and trying to take something away. Unfortunately, in Mrityu Sara Harasjaham, Krishna comes and he takes everything away. Therefore, for the materialist, the Asura, although they think they're godly, God is the biggest demon. Because God is taking everything away. Therefore, it's very difficult for a materialist to have a favorable attitude towards God. The best they have is business attitude. I do this for you, you do that for me. You don't do anything for me, I don't do anything for you. This, or the give and takings. You give to me, and I take from you. So that's more or less material life. It's a life of business, all based upon my service to my false ego, because that is the purpose of life. That is the center of existence. The sun rises in the morning, just so it can shine on me. Otherwise, what is the value of the sun? No value. On the other hand, with a little knowledge, or a lot of knowledge, one learns, first of all, that we're not the center of existence, or our body is not the center of existence. Because actually, we're not the body. We become servants of the body. And we become servants of things in connection with the body. Although we think, it's my body, it's my family, it's my country. But actually I'm just a servant of these things. And they become the center of my attention because my body has become the center of my existence. My family has become the center of existence because I'm the center of existence. And because I'm the center of existence, I take these things as sources of my inspiration, as a source of my happiness, as a source of my security and comfort. And therefore, I'm striving hard in order to make these things, arrange these things in such a way as I get the maximum benefit from them. So introducing the concept that actually there's a God. And it's not us. People like the idea that there's a God, but then they hear it's them, and they go, well, that sounds very good. But to introduce the concept there's a God, that we're supposed to be the center of existence, and not only supposed to be, but he is the center of existence. Whether we acknowledge him or not, everything is going on according to his direction. And because we don't acknowledge him, we're caught up in this false drama that's going on, which is taking us absolutely nowhere. Or at worst, it's taking us into more and more bewilderment and more suffering. On the other hand, Krishna consciousness begins when Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that we're not this body. Now, how many people are going around telling other people you're not your body? When they have family reunions, does the head of the family stand up and say, my dear family members, I have something to tell you, we're not these bodies. Has anyone been at such a family reunion? What about the school? If you go to the learned universities, does any of the professors stand up before the class and say, my dear class students, I had something important to tell you, very important for your education. Actually, we're not the body. We're eternal souls. Has anyone had such an experience at a university? Or even at a university, has any university that we've gone to explain that actually God is a person and He's controlling every atom in this university and all the universes? If you said that in America, at least, at best, you get fired. But they didn't put you in prison for some time. Is that right? Could you imagine going to university, being a professor at a university, and telling people you're not this body? Or that there's a God, even worse. There's a God, and it's not us. And even worse, the biggest blasphemy at a university would say, God is a person. My God.
No.
How can you say that? So this is nothing new. Socrates was teaching the youth about the eternality of the soul. And the elders in the city determined that Socrates was actually degrading the youth in the city and forced them to commit suicide by drinking hemlock. So even some thousands of years ago, it was considered to be blasphemy to talk about what to speak of God, the eternality of the self. Therefore, if we're going to get some real education, it's going to be by hearing Bhagavad Gita, not by reading the newspapers or any other so-called educational means. As a matter of fact, practicing all the education nowadays is meant to put people into deeper and deeper ignorance. And how does that ignorance happen? Krishna says, Dhyayato vishayam pumsam sangasteshu prajayate sangasangayate kama kama krodo vijayate. While we're contemplating, dhyana, everything begins with dhyana. We enter into this world with a certain kind of faith. And what does faith mean? What is the word for faith? Shraddha. Sadda. Sadda. So sad means the heart, our mind, our feeling, what we've experienced, happiness, distress, whatever else goes into our heart. And da, it means where we're going to put our heart now. So that's our intelligence. According to where we feel that we've put our love, our attention, whatever our intelligence tells us, whatever our experience tells us, that's where we put it. So we've come to class, where we're living, we're existing eternally. Now we're in the material world. Now we have so much experience in this lifetime, in previous lifetimes. Now the question is, where are we going to put our consciousness? If one is Krishna conscious, a little Krishna conscious, then there's some possibility of electing to put our consciousness in Krishna. Just like here we're in the class, everyone will agree that it's good. Let us put our consciousness in Krishna right now. Let us think about Krishna. Let us understand Krishna. When we sit down to take prasadam, we may not be so much inclined to that as in the class, for instance. We may want to hear about what happened yesterday. Did you hear about so-and-so? No, what happened? Oh, we're taking prasadam, Prabhu, sorry. Tell me. No, I promise I wouldn't tell anyone. No, you gotta tell me. I told you about that, all right. We shouldn't say this word for sure. Oh, sorry, no problem. What to speak about under other circumstances, how it becomes even more difficult to put our minds in Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada arranged it that we have a regulated program, especially these five powerful processes which help put our minds on Krishna. Namely, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, chanting Hare Krishna,
associating with the devotees, living and staying in a holy place, and worshiping the deities. So these are very powerful processes to put the mind on Krishna, and they're all taking place within a very short period of time called our sadhana, especially in the temple here. On the other hand, those who don't have that opportunity, don't have that knowledge, either in the temple or out of the temple, then they're going to decide to meditate upon something else. And the whole modern society is simply to encourage them. Why all these stores with all these dresses and clothes and perfumes and all kinds of gadgets? What is it all meant for? It's all meant to distract us from, people aren't distracted. Simply attract them more and more to sense gratification. Some kind of sense gratification, something to eat, something to smell, something to taste, something to hear about, something to see, and then ultimately winding up utilizing our growth, our knowledge acquiring senses and our activity senses, especially the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, in order to enjoy sense gratification. Therefore, the whole modern society is just like a huge propaganda machine, glorifying sense gratification in unlimited ways, and all coming back again and again when possible, either to illicit sex, which has become more or less glorified to an extreme amount. The bookstore is full of romances, the radio, the television, the movies, everything is, it's all romance. And not only with men, with men, women, with animals, with everything. Everyone's in love. And it's, according to them, it's great. And you have to buy clothes, and you have to buy the perfume, and everything. It just makes it even more wonderful. Something which the Goswami says is tuchava, insignificant, or as it says, atevidu swartikadhimi Krishna, Vishnu, the Rashayam Yevahir Arthamanina. They don't know that the aim is to obtain Krishna. And instead they're running after insignificant things. If they were significant, if they were effective, then everyone downtown Melbourne would be dancing in ecstasy, shopping and working. They'd all be full of bliss because it was so effective. They put on these clothes and they were in Vaikuntha. They put on this perfume and everyone fell at their feet. But it doesn't work like that. It's in the punacharvatacharvatana. It may be glorified as something new, as something different, as something more powerful, but ultimately winds up the same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And as soon as people fall into that, then gayato vishyam pumsam, then they look around. What's there for me? What is my sense object that will make me happy? What is the sense object that will make me happy? And what will happen? Finally, oh, that's the one. I knew what was happening, why I was unhappy. I only have an iPhone 6, and there's the 7. Heaven's just a few steps away. I need it. I can't live without it. I'll sacrifice my very blood to get it. And then I get it. Oh, I need an iPhone 7S. I made the wrong choice. I gotta get another one. And then we get it. They lied to me. It's not heaven. And now I gotta work like a dog to pay for it. I've been cheated. They're a bunch of cheaters. Then anger. And then a whole drama. We create a whole drama. I'm an innocent victim.
They exploited me. It's the Illuminati who caused this whole thing. And then we enter in a whole world of delusion, and we forget anything that we learned that was real. We forget. We take ourselves out of, you know, we had nothing to do with it. I was completely a victim. And our whole intelligence is lost. We lose whatever God consciousness we had. And we simply become more lusty, more angry, more greedy, more deluded. And we wind up contemplating other objects to counteract the activities that we just perform to get other objects. And one gets lost in the whirlpool of material existence. Therefore, one is very fortunate even if one has a little contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. Something else to put the consciousness on. A little shraddha, a little liking for Krishna. Then one may come and associate with the devotees. One may hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. One may even obtain the Bhagavad Gita and learn we're not this body. We're spiritual beings. Our real happiness is in some spiritual atmosphere, not becoming absorbed in a material atmosphere. My real happiness is not serving my false ego, using my intelligence to serve the false conception of my ego. Either I can serve my senses or serve other people's senses to make me happy. But the real ego, I am Krishna's servant. I should utilize this body, mind, words in Krishna's service, and that will actually awaken my spiritual consciousness of Krishna and in association with Krishna and Krishna's devotees and service of them, then I can actually feel real happiness. Because Krishna is concentrated bliss. And those who serve Krishna, they become transmitters of that concentrated bliss. And Prabhupada says here that if we're not realizing that, if we're becoming more absorbed in our material concepts, then obviously we're going the wrong direction. So in order to stop that, Prabhupada recommends fast on the waning and the waxing moon, 2 days of Ekadasi, the birthdays of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some austerity to become detached from the pushing of the senses. But that's not sufficient. The whole idea of fasting and Ekadasi, as Prabhupada says, is to absorb the mind more in Krishna. What reason why we fast on Janmasri is not that God is causing me suffering all the time. On this day, it's his birthday, so there's some special suffering. No, so we can remember Krishna more. And if we remember Krishna, then there will be no more seeing a repeated birth. Vishayan Mahane Purusha Darshana Vipadakshani Tat Bhakt Vipadakshani I wish that we could see these problems again and again, Queen Kundi says, so that we can see you again and again. Because by seeing you, there will be no more seeing repeated birth and death. So the idea is that when there's some difficulty, one of our problems is that we don't think we're in difficulty. Therefore, we don't take shelter of Krishna. Therefore, we have to put ourselves in what we think now in a difficulty so that I can take shelter of Krishna. For instance, when we stay in the temple, it's a normal day, prasadam is being supplied, everything is nice. So I can remember Krishna, I may not remember Krishna, there's no big deal. Everything will be alright. Prasadam is good. Or as they say in Spanish, Bariva Yena Corazon Contento, which means, if the stomach is full, the heart is satisfied. So it's a nice, normal day, everything's going all right, no problem. Or they say in Australia, no worries, Mike, she'll be right. But she won't be right. She's going to take another birth again. There is something to worry about. Therefore, a little fasting in our stomach is saying, it's not all right, it's not all right. We have to take shelter of Krishna, hopefully. We take shelter of Krishna, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna, and then we get a higher taste. We go away from serving our empty stomach to serving Krishna, and we realize that the purpose of life is not to make sure that my stomach is filled every day, although it's not bad to have it full, but it's not the purpose of life. The purpose of life is to become conscious of Krishna. And whether my stomach's full or not, still I must become conscious of Krishna. Similarly, other kinds of services are meant so that we can take shelter of Krishna. Like, for instance, book distribution. Suddenly, we're not the center of existence anymore at the beginning. Suddenly, we're just an insignificant living entity. All these people there, they couldn't care less if I'm the temple commander, if I'm the GBC, if I'm a sannyasi, if I'm, you know, the best book distributor in the temple yesterday or in the last 3 years. These people couldn't care less. I have to surrender to Krishna, or else they're just going to walk over me. Or then, even if I surrender to Krishna, they may still walk over me. So I have to become tolerant. But if I want to become effective, then I have to take shelter of Krishna. Because it's Krishna who makes the arrangements. It's Krishna who gives remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And without his mercy and help, I'm not going to do anything here except to suffer. Therefore, although book distribution, for instance, is a great austerity, it's a great learning opportunity also, how to actually become really dependent upon Krishna. Really understand that we're not the doer, that we are depending on him. We have to depend upon him, or else we're not going to become very successful. But that's not only book distribution, it's any time. Everything will depend our success, how much we feel dependent upon Krishna and his representatives. Sometimes it may become more obvious, sometimes less obvious. But at the time of death, that's the real test. How much we're really depending upon Krishna and his representatives to pass that test. Without depending upon them completely, become detached from our material circumstance, namely leaving our body at the time of death, and all the other paraphernalia we had that was utilized in service to Krishna, and be willing to completely depend upon simply where Krishna wants us to go and what Krishna wants us to do at that time. If we come to that platform, then we'll successfully pass the test, or else we'll have to take a retest. Which is not bad. At least we're getting a retest rather than simply failing one. So to sum it up, then devotional service, it says here, cannot be performed blindly. We must become conscious of Krishna. We must understand our dependence upon Krishna. We have to understand who we actually are. We have to understand so many things and then work with that knowledge. Then, eventually, it says, well, you'll be able to visualize Krishna. We'll be in Krishna's association all the time. And the result will be, we'll become detached from all the things that we think we need in order to perform devotional service. Then we'll understand that if I have Krishna, I have everything. And if I don't have Krishna, then I have nothing. But that renunciation has to be very strong because we're very inclined to become dependent upon material things. So, This helps performing a little austerity. Living in the temple or visiting the temple helps with our austerity. And whether one lives at home, still one can perform the same austerity. Austerity, sit before the deities, chant Hare Krishna in the morning and the evening, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, offer the food to the deity, do some service to the deity, and eventually invite others to understand about the deity. So this is all part of austerity. And detachment from what we, our material conceptions of life. If we do that, and especially it says here, fast on certain days, go deny the senses a little bit, then by practice, our mind will become more fixed on Krishna. And when our mind is completely fixed on Krishna, we'll actually develop love for Krishna. Love so strong that our attraction for everything else will seem insignificant. So, thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes?
You mentioned about the five parts in the process of the devotional service, and the Prabhupada's included them in the morning program. So, how can people, devotees include them in their lives?
Well, everyone's living, usually most of us live in a house. So, have some deities or a picture of the deities there. Get up in the morning, early enough. Sing Mangal Arati. Sing Hare Krishna. Offer some prasadam to the deities. Do some service for them. Here's the picture. Hear about Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Associate with whatever devotees there are, even with the wife or children, whatever else. Make them into devotees. So, it could be done anywhere. Even if you live underneath a tree, put a picture of Krishna on the tree. Wake up and do Mangal Arati. It could be done anywhere in any circumstances. There's no problem. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Congratulations, my Bhagavatam. Ki jai. Ki jai.